So the quick announcements I have is that this is class 5 out of 6 for Mind and Its Potential, one of my favorite modules, actually. And so next week will be our last class of this module. Then we have a 1 week break and we come back for How to Meditate, which is another favorite of mine. And also, I just wanted to make sure that everyone is aware of the Kadampa Center website and all the good things that are happening at Kadampa Center. So there's lots and lots of opportunities for meditation practices, for Tara practices, for teachings with Geshe Gelug. So be sure to see kadampa-center.org and look at the calendar. Make sure if you're not already signed up to receive emails, you can get that information delivered right to your inbox. So there's always so much going on, it's hard to keep up with it all, but it is in a nice, concise place on the website. So that's my only announcement. So I am now going to turn it over to Robbie. There he is.
Okay, thank you, Linda. Good evening, everyone. I hope this finds everyone healthy and well. As Linda said, this is our 5th class. I think if it goes according to plan, we'll get to do a little bit more meditation tonight than we usually do. But we'll see how it goes. I can't promise anything. But we will start with our prayers. We've walked through the prayers, so we can just repeat them without any commentary tonight, and then we'll do our first meditation of the evening. Okay, so we'll start with refuge in bodhicitta 3 times, 4 immeasurables, and then the mandala offering with the hand mudra if you learned it last week or already know it. And if you don't know the hand mudra, that's not important, and that'll be discussed again in How to Meditate, I'm sure. So if you can mute yourself, I'll read the prayers in English and you can read along with me. I go for refuge until I'm enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create through listening to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create through listening to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create through listening to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. May all sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all sentient beings be inseparable from the happiness that is free from suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from attachment for friends or hatred for enemies. This ground, anointed with perfume, strewn with flowers, adorned with Mount Meru, 4 continents, the sun and the moon. I imagine this as a Buddha field and offer it. May all sentient beings enjoy this pure land. Idam Guru Ratna Mandala Kam Nirya Tayami. Okay, so we've said our prayers. We've tilled the soil in which we're going to plant the seed of our meditation. Plant these seeds in our mental continuum. And the prayers serve to just soften our mind a little bit, help us set aside all the bustle of the day and all the thoughts that are racing in our mind. So we'll begin our meditation by establishing our posture. And I think people are becoming familiar with that. I assume most people are sitting in a chair. So you're not leaning against the back of the chair, but just sitting to the front of the chair. Your back is a little bit straighter than you normally sit, so not rigid or tight, but just a little bit more erect. It's said to be a king-like or regal posture. Head maybe a couple degrees in front of the vertical, but not tilted to one side or the other. Eyes either just slightly open or lightly closed, but not clenched. Mouth lightly closed, again, not clenched. Tongue against the hard palate behind our upper teeth. Shoulders are down and a little bit back, so our chest is opened up. Upper arms are away from sides of our torso. Right hand on left, with thumbs touching slightly below our navels. Again, if we're sitting in a chair, our feet are flat on the floor. It's okay to put a cushion underneath your feet if you need that. If you are sitting on a cushion, you're towards the front of the cushion and your legs are crossed in a position that you find stable and non-distracting. So take a moment, scan your body from the top of your head down to the soles of your feet. Identify any sources of discomfort or tension and address those now so they don't become a recurring theme of your meditation to follow. So we've established our posture. Now we'll begin by taking three deep breaths from the abdomen, with the stomach expanding on the in-breath, pulling our diaphragm down, and then contracting towards our spine on the out-breath. Three slow breaths that way. And now we allow our breathing to return to its normal pattern. And as always, we begin our meditation by setting our motivation. And even if it doesn't come easily or naturally, let's concentrate on the bodhicitta motivation, the great mind motivation. The thought that I am doing this meditation and participating in the discussion that follows so that I may become enlightened in order to benefit others. The wish to become enlightened to benefit others. Incredibly powerful motivation. And having set our motivation, we now begin the actual meditation. We'll continue with the simple concentration meditation we've been doing each week. The mind aware of the movement of the breath in and out through the openings of our nose, the nostrils, the tactile sensation of the movement of air. As we talked about before, this is an awareness, a cognitive taking on of an object. The mind takes on the tactile sensation of air moving in and out through our nostrils. Not describing it, not saying it's nice or it's bad, not describing it, not counting it, not visualizing it. Just the tactile sensation, not the sound, not the image, just the tactile feeling of the movement of air. Mind aware of that sensation. With no description, no story, no elaboration. And every time we wander away, as we inevitably will, we set that aside, whatever we've wandered off to, and come back to the breath over and over and over again. And that is the meditation. And we'll do that for 7 minutes about. And we can end our meditation with a dedication. We can acknowledge that we've created some positive imprints by sitting quietly in this way and developing our mind's ability to concentrate. And we think, may those imprints not be lost, but may they ripen in the future in a way that benefits all living beings. And you can relax your concentration. Okay, good evening again, everyone. As Linda said, this is the fifth of our six sessions. I think we'll cover all the material I want to cover between tonight and next week. This module is entitled Mind and Its Potential, and it's the foundation for all the modules in Discovering Buddhism that are to follow. So it's very important that we be clear about what we're talking about when we talk about mind in the Buddhist sense. We haven't really talked about the potential part much, but maybe we'll touch on that next week. Just to review a little bit, the Tibetan word for mind is sem, S-E-M. The Sanskrit word is citta, as in bodhicitta, C-H-I-T-T-A. Those are terms that you may hear. Other English words that are used for what we're talking about are consciousness, awareness, knowledge sometimes, but that's not quite the same thing. Consciousness or awareness are used somewhat interchangeably. We're not talking about the brain. As we've said several times, the mind is that non-physical aspect of our being. The Buddhist point of view, we can be divided. One way of explaining who we are is that we are a physical body and a non-physical mind that come together for a period of time and then separate. And that is the sum of who we are. That's in the simplest terms. And there are many, many ways in Buddhism that the Buddha explained who we are. The five aggregates is a little bit more elaborate description of who we are. That'll be in one of the future modules. We also talk about mind and mental factors, which is another module further down the road. But to keep it simple, we're a physical body, non-physical mind. The mind is the completely non-physical aspect of our being. It is without beginning. There was never a first moment of mind that can be located or determined. There was always a previous moment of consciousness or awareness of mind. And in the same way, there will never be a final moment of consciousness. There is no, according to the Tibetan Buddhist teachings, there is no extinction of consciousness or non-existence. Consciousness does not begin and it does not end. A consciousness that exists cannot go out of existence. That's an impossibility according to the teachings of the Buddha. So it's non-physical, it's without beginning, and it's without end. And its nature is in the nature of clear light. Or if you want to get a little jargony, we could say it's empty of any permanent features. Okay, the mind is in the nature of clear light. And all the things that we think of in a conventional sense that make up who we are, our personality, our likes and dislikes, things we know, our educational achievements, all of those are just temporary phenomena, but are not the permanent nature of the mind. So this is really, I think, where Buddhism is incredibly optimistic in that that is what allows us ultimately to become enlightened, which is the ultimate potential of the mind. Each consciousness has that potential or ability within it, and that potential exists because the mind has no permanent characteristics. If we were stuck with being angry or resentful or with being a victim or with any of these negative mind states that we experience so frequently, if we were stuck with those, enlightenment would be impossible. It would not be a possibility. But that the fact that those are not part of the, not the permanent nature of the mind, but just temporary phenomena occurring within this empty space of the mind, means that they can be decreased, removed, and ultimately permanently eliminated. So this goes far beyond what standard Western psychology would say, in that we, you know, it's not about developing coping skills or dealing with the deck that life has dealt us in the best way we possibly can, but it opens up infinite possibilities, even in this lifetime, according to the Buddha. If not in this lifetime, over future lifetimes. So the mind is clear, like a vast empty sky. Okay? None of what the thoughts we think are in the permanent nature of the mind. Okay? And the function of the mind is to be aware. To be aware of the physical objects around us, to see things, hear things, taste, touch things, and also to think things, to remember, to have emotions, to plan, to have likes and dislikes, to have a personality that's temporary, not permanent. All those are things that the mind is aware of. And it's in the Buddhist view of things, we don't divide our mind into heart and brain, or heart and intellect and heart, or however we like to do it in the West. All of those are everything we think of as heart, which is the emotions, the positive feelings, the love and the generosity. That's a mental phenomena in the same way that 2 plus 2 is, knowing that 2 plus 2 is 4 is a mental phenomena. There's no real distinction between heart and brain, heart and mind, heart and intellect in the Buddhist point of view. They are just different objects that the mind perceives. So being aware of all of that, that leads us to this very simple description of the mind, the four-word description, if you count "and" as a word, but it's only three words in the Tibetan. Sam Gyal, I don't know how to pronounce this, G-S, Gyal Rig. Sam being mirror, Gyal being clarity, and awareness, Rig being awareness. The mind is mirror, clarity, and awareness. It's the clear space in which awareness of objects occur. By objects, I mean, like I just said, both physical objects and mental objects. Or we can say awareness of phenomena. We cannot call those everything, physical objects and mental objects, as phenomena. The mind is mere clarity and awareness. Mirror in the sense of only. We can't find anything else there but the clarity and the action of being aware. Personality and all of that cannot be found in the mind if we look at it carefully in meditation, according to the Buddha. Of course, none of this is to be taken on faith. All of this is to be looked at in meditation and taken against your own experience and work with, and take what you find valid and set aside what you don't find valid. So awareness, as we've also said, is an activity. This is the action of the mind. This is what the mind does. It is aware. It perceives is another term that uses. It cognizes is another word that's used. That's the action of the mind. Clarity is its nature. Awareness is what it does. Okay? And by awareness, we're referring to, as I mentioned in the meditation, a cognitive taking on of an object. So that when we do the simple breathing meditation, the mind is aware of the physical sensation of the breath. It is taking that on, mentally taking that on. It's almost as if their nature is identical. Okay, the awareness and the breath. They take on, they join in a way, okay? Another term that's used, it says the awareness engages. You'll hear that term a lot when you study the Buddhist text. They'll talk about engagement. The mind, through awareness, engages with the physical sensation of the breath. And every thought that passes through our mind, and the more we meditate, I think the more we become aware of how many thoughts there are. And there are even countless more than even when we're in meditation than we become aware of. I mean, there are, you know, countless mental moments in the snap of a finger, according to the Buddha. I think he said 64,000 or something like that. 64,000 mental engagements, the mind engaging with an object. Now, right now, our perception is quite crude and coarse. So we're just aware of engaging with the big stuff, like that guy cut me off at the intersection. I'm aware of that. That's engaging not just with this car that cut in front of me, but with the anger and all the stories that follow upon that. And the mind is engaging with each part of that sequence. Because I think I mentioned this before, according to the Buddhist model, there can only be one thought in the mind at any single moment. You can't have two thoughts simultaneously. The mind can only engage with one object at a time. Now, it happens so quickly, it seems like we're thinking about a lot of things at once, but we're actually going back and forth between them very quickly. Okay, so that's what the mind does. It engages. It is aware. And so the meditation I asked you to do this past week was just to begin to look at the sequence of thoughts that arise in the mind, one after another, and not getting caught up with any of them, but just seeing thought after thought after thought, where you can say awareness, awareness, awareness. I'm aware of the sound of the ventilating system. I'm aware of this light over here. I'm aware that I've got a lot of paperwork to do tomorrow at work. I'm aware that that irritates me. Or you can say, engage, engage, engage. Or you cannot say anything and just look at the thoughts as they arise and just do that for a while and then draw back a little bit and get some sense of the thoughts are just passing through the mind. There is a little bit of distance between the mind and the thoughts that pass through it. Now, this is not saying that we should become detached or not pay attention to our thoughts or back up, become emotionally detached or anything, but this is a fundamental principle in Buddhism that we realize that the thoughts are not our mind. They are just temporary phenomena arising within that clarity. And they do not change the clarity. Okay? The fact that I'm having an angry thought, it may seem like that is affected. It does make a karmic imprint. on my mental continuum, but it does not negate the ultimate clarity of my mind. And the image that we, analogies are good when we're talking about this. We think about mud dispersed in water. Okay, if we let it settle, the water is still clear. The mud did not permanently change the nature of the water. It just temporarily occupied some of that space. So all the procession of thoughts, without beginning, without end, occurring within the space of the mind, just passing through like clouds through a sky, or like a continually flowing river, just passing through, or like an empty stage and the actors come on and walk off. Okay? So let's do that meditation again. Any questions or comments first before we sit down to meditate?
I don't see anything yet. So.
Okay, if they're after, we'll do some after the meditation then, okay?
And I will say to folks on streaming on YouTube, like last week, for some reason, I am not able to chat on YouTube, and I don't think folks are able to chat with us. So I've sent a message to one of our IT guys. So maybe we'll get that fixed. I'm not sure if it's okay. Something on our end or YouTube.
Maybe they revoked your privileges for something you said, Linda.
So okay. I apologize to our YouTubers. We can't see your question.
Okay. So let's check your posture. You're familiar with that. Three deep breaths from the abdomen. Allow your breathing to return to its normal pattern. Set your motivation, generating the bodhicitta motivation. And we'll do a couple minutes of concentration meditation, awareness, engaging with the tactile sensation of the breath moving in and out through our nostrils. The awareness taking on the breath, engaging with the breath through our sense of feeling, of tactile sensation. And now, our mind staying a little bit more concentrated, a little bit more focused, we're just going to look at the nonstop flow of thoughts within the empty space of our mind. Not trying to direct them or guide them. We just let them come up as they will, and we place our concentration on each one, seeing how it arises and then fades, one after another. A sound from the other room, a feeling in my fingertips, a memory of something that happened at work today, an ache in my back, one thought after another, just gently acknowledge each one as a thought. If it helps, you can say thought, thought, but you don't need to. And just observe, concentrate on the nonstop, never interrupted flow of thoughts, of awarenesses, of engagements. Mind being aware of one object after another, after another, after another. And now in your meditation, see if you can pull back a little bit and be aware of the empty space in which those thoughts are occurring. There are the awarenesses, and then almost around them, you could say, there is the clarity of the mind. So place your concentration on that, not on the thoughts, but on the clarity of the mind in which the thoughts occur. And you can relax your concentration now. And if you have any comments or questions, you could type those in now and we'll get to those in just a couple minutes. Last time I touched briefly on, we become aware, these awarenesses interact or engage with their objects through our six senses. And in Buddhism, there are six senses. They're the five we normally think of: visual sense, auditory sense, olfactory sense, gustatory sense, tactile sense, and then there's mental sense. And so we all have eyes, ears, nose, throats, and brains. And just to use a simple example of the pen, because that's convenient, my eye organ or sense organ perceives the pen. And according to the Buddha, there's initially a very direct, almost non-conceptual interaction with the pen. Okay, my sense, it strikes the rods and cones on the back of my eye, and then there's what's referred to as a kind of subconsciousness, or not in the sense that we use subconsciousness, but say subsidiary consciousness. The visual consciousness that has a fairly direct perception of this without any story attached to it, without even identifying it as a pen. For visual objects, it said what the eye consciousness or eye subsidiary consciousness perceives is shape and color. It doesn't see pen. Okay, it sees shape and color. And the shape and color that my eye consciousness sees is going to be quite different, for example, than what a fly that has all that, there's multiple, what shape and color a fly sees while looking at this, while engaging with this phenomena. Neither one is more correct than the other. They're both determined by my karma that gave me a human body and the fly's karma that gave it a fly's body. And so we can't say that one is right and one is wrong. Okay, the shape and form that appear to the eye consciousness. Okay, so that's determined by karma. And then in this life as a human being, if I've had the karma in the past to encounter a pen and somebody when I was 5 years old taught me what a pen was, now upon that direct perception, my mind says, oh, pen, okay? That's another mental moment, okay, beyond that initial perception. And then my mind will say, I don't particularly like this pen because it leaked ink on me when I was writing with it once. So this is a bad pen. And I should really throw this pen away and get a better pen because I'm a good guy and I work hard and I deserve a better pen, blah, 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 blah. So our karma is off and running, you know, from this, starting with shape and form. And this is something that you'll hear the little monks in the monasteries. That's something they're debating at age 8. Are we shape or are are we shape or are we color? Which are we? Okay. And the visual consciousness picks up both. But the label pen and all the story that we project on that, again, is a result of karma, past actions of body, speech, and mind. And the fact that if a dog saw this, it might see it as a toy to chew. Okay. It's not going to see pen. It may ask, oh, that's something I can pick up in my mouth and put some teeth marks in. And that'll be fun. And it'll have a completely different story about this shape and color. Okay. And the fly will have a completely different story, none of which are any more correct, according to the Buddhist philosophy, than the other. And if I say I've got a bad case of cataracts, then the form is going to be very fuzzy. Well, if I've got good eyes, the form is going to be quite distinct. But again, that's determined by karma. Okay? So everything in that whole process of being aware, of engaging with an object, is a series of karmic events ripening. Okay? So we can say our mind is completely out of control in that, you know, we look at this process of thoughts and it looks like total chaos. The truth is, it's under the control of our karma. It's our karma that's controlling it. And if we don't like the fact that this is a lousy pen and it leaks ink on my hands and I deserve a better pen, then I need to create the karma to perceive a better pen. Now, that's a pretty trivial example. But when we start to apply it to things like our emotions, anger comes up. Initially, just this sensation of anger without even a label on it. Then we put the label on it. I'm angry at him because he said this and he shouldn't have said that to me. And I'm really deserving of more respect. And because of that, I'm going to treat him in this way. And that is a result of having thought that way in the past. That's the way karma works. If we think angry thoughts, this all comes up in the class in karma, we're creating the cause to think angry thoughts and again in the future. So the point, what I'm bringing this up is just to get a sense of how through our sense organs, there is a direct perception, then we label it, then the story comes up on top of it, and we're off and running at that point. Okay, pretty much out of control for us, but very much under the impersonal control of the karmic imprints that are being carried on our mind stream. Okay, so that is how these awarenesses arise, and one moment of awareness leads to another, leads to another, and it's just the story, and it just goes on and on. It's all the result of karma. So do we have any questions, Linda, in the chat room?
Yes. So let's see here.
Let me see. I can click.
I was so caught up in what you were saying. I forgot to kind of check on the chat. Okay. Let's see here. Willis.
I think I answered Lori's question. Yeah, she was
Lori asked, right with you. Yeah, I'll ask it out loud for YouTube streamers. During meditation, I wondered where the thoughts come from. Are these karmic imprints arising and dissolving?
Yes, very much.
If I do not engage with the thought, does that end the imprint?
Well, we're using engaged in two senses. The sense I was using is just a very basic awareness of it, okay? Every time we have a thought, we engage with it. I think what Lori is referring to is if we kind of interact with it and play with it and keep it alive, if we just observe it and let it go away, that karma has ripened, okay? If we react to an angry thought with more anger, then we're creating more karma to be angry again in the future. But if we can just observe a thought and let it subside without any emotional component being applied, then that karmic seed has expired. Of course, that's very hard to do. Most of these thoughts that causes problems have a lot of emotional baggage with them, and that arises pretty quickly. Okay, good question.
And that actually ties nicely to the next question that Daya asked. During breath-focused meditation, I can disengage and connect to the breath, but during awareness meditation, I begin to observe my thoughts. It's difficult not to engage and just observe and more to draw back from them. Any tips or suggestions on how we get better?
Practice. It'll get you to Carnegie Hall and it'll get you to be more comfortable with this meditation. Most people find analytic meditation more difficult than a simple concentration meditation initially. But just practice, yeah.
And I do have a student who's commented that when meditating, the body sways some. I'm not still physically, except in my mind.
Mm-hmm. Say that again.
When the student is meditating, they notice that their body sways, maybe back and forth, and I've seen that and experienced that a lot too. So although they're physically not still, they are still in their mind.
So I wouldn't worry about that. That's fine. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, that's just like breathing. Yeah. The pulse. Yeah. Something. Yeah. I wouldn't get hung up on trying to dampen down the sway. Yeah.
And then John says, the readings describe the suffering of change. It seems to say that in samsara, that even pleasant feelings are still suffering. Is that because pleasant feelings / pleasure is fleeting and impermanent?
Yes. Yeah, that's not really the subject of this class, but that's, yeah. And we cling to pleasant sensations, and we don't want them to end. So there is an element of pain, even in the most pleasant sensation, according to the Buddha, in our current state of confusion. Okay, now there is possible to experience the bliss of a Buddha, but that involves working with our mind. But right now we get very attached to pleasurable sensations. So there is suffering as they draw to an end. There becomes more suffering as you get to the next to last day of vacation, you know, and we know we're going to be back at work. You know, gets the pleasure of the vacation diminishes and the suffering of the end of the vacation increases. Yeah. Okay, I want to do another meditation. We'll go a few minutes over. This one will just be just to follow up on the discussion that we've just had. Like you sit quietly. Just breathe for a moment. Now I'd like you to pay attention to the first sound that you hear without seeking to, without putting a label on it, without describing it, just the first sound in the background that comes to your awareness when I stop talking. No label, no story, just perception of sound. Now describe the sound. Is it loud? Is it soft? Is it high-pitched? Low-pitched? Buzzy? Rumbling? Now put a label on the sound. Is it someone moving around downstairs? Is it the rain outside? Is it the heating system blowing? Now describe how you feel about it. Is it a pleasant sound? An unpleasant sound? A fairly neutral sound? And what other thoughts does that sound bring up? Memories of when you've heard it before? Wondering who that is walking around? So that's the way we engage with every moment of thought. But it happens so fast that we're not even aware of it. The mind is just off to the races. But if we become aware of how the mind works, then we begin to understand how to control it and how to cultivate the thoughts that eventually lead to the state of complete enlightenment. So you can relax your concentration. So again, finish all the readings, and then meditate for 6 days this week. Start with 5 minutes of concentration meditation, and then 10 minutes of watching the same meditation that we did last week, watching the procession of thoughts, then looking at the clarity of the space in which the thoughts occur, and then at the very end, look for the self, the I, the me. You've got the thoughts, the clarity. Now, Buddha said that's all there is. He said mere clarity and awareness, okay? Awareness being the interactions, the engagements. See if there is anything else. If you disagree with the Buddha, that's fine. So that'll be for 6 days this week, and then we'll come together next week for our last session. Any other comments before we go?
You know what? Actually, someone was able to post something on YouTube. Go figure.
Okay.
It says, what strategy is best for building one's confidence in potential to reach enlightenment when challenges of life and others' attitudes are perceived as an evidence of mainly negative karma created?
Yeah, okay. So the potential is there. You don't have to develop your potential. You have that potential. That's a given. If you have a consciousness, you have the potential to become enlightened, okay? If it seems like that clarity of your mind is mainly experiencing the ripening of negative karma, the implication is that you need to do what we call purification, which is, again, not the subject of this course, this module, okay, but is a way of lessening the impact of negative karma. But if you're becoming aware, just being aware of what's occurring in the mind is really what this module is about. And becoming aware of it, it can be discouraging because a lot of it does seem negative at first, but that's okay. I think we almost all have that experience. So don't get stuck. There is light at the end of the tunnel. But the potential is there completely, okay? The potential to become enlightened, we all have equally. And that's how that's one way, very important way that we're all alike, in that we all equally have that potential. Everyone, even our worst enemy, has that potential, okay? All right, well, thank you, everyone. Stay healthy, and we will get together next week, same time, same place. And thank you, Linda, for all your assistance.
Thank you, Robbie. Thanks, everyone.
Okay.